pictured this. Recording studios somewhere far, far away.
The Merry White House Experience! Thank you very much. Thank you very much. And now, to begin the show, a topical reference. Recently, as you may know, Mike Getting has remarked, "I know nothing about apartheid." He's been severely criticised for this, which is a bit unfair, as he was actually misquoted. What he actually said was, "I know nothing about cricket." I'm David Baddiel, and this is Punt and Dennis. And now, the return of the education experience. Since our last bulletin, the sad news is that Kenneth Baker is no longer in charge of Britain's schools. All those years of experience trying to get five-year-olds to understand simple concepts like reading and writing made him the ideal candidate to become chairman of the Conservative Party. In his place comes John McGregor.
Mr. McGregor has wasted no time in getting down to the nitty-gritty at the Department of Education. His first move since he got there? Mr. McGregor has opted to tackle the appalling lack of pro-British emphasis in GCSE history teaching.
This has all come about as a result of Kenneth Baker's insistence on a national curriculum. This is a brilliant money-saving idea, since if everybody is doing the same course, there will only need to be one textbook for each subject. Then, with careful timetabling and a few motorbike couriers, they'll be able to cover the entire country using only 27 textbooks.
History is always a contentious subject for politicians. Tories feel that for years the subject has been under left-wing influence. Out will go questions like this.
The British Empire was a repressive fascist imperialist institution which crushed the rights of free peoples everywhere. Discuss by means of mime or free expression. Marks will be deducted for correct spelling. Or for being male.
Since the government wants history to be taught with a pro-British bias, this will presumably extend as far back as possible.
3 billion years ago, the Earth was formed from a swirling mass of cosmic gases. The surface of the planet at this time was a primeval soup of molten lava and boiling oceans. But soon, a definite shape began to emerge. It was the United Kingdom, closely followed by the Falkland Islands. After these, small, wriggling, one-celled, primitive life forms began to crawl onto the land. These were the first young conservatives.
But it's not all politics. Wider issues will be covered. And again, the focus will be on subjects close to the heart of the Tory party.
Which of the following inventions do you consider most influential on human progress and why? A. The printing press. B. The motorised golf trolley. C. Nice V-neck jumpers from M&S. D. Nuclear fission. Or E. The Rover biscuit assortment.
There will also be empathy questions, in which the candidate is asked to imagine himself to be a historical character.
Imagine that you are Lord Nelson in 1805 at the height of the Battle of Trafalgar. What, in your opinion, would be the best high-yield pension scheme for you? Amongst other things, in the new history syllabus, we will be taught that Jesus went to Eton, dinosaurs died out due to market forces, and that the cradle of civilization, Mesopotamia, was in fact the area we now call Surrey.
Picture this.
My name's Mark Thomas. This is the bit of the show where I discuss a topic that's been going on. What I was going to start with was a quick joke, which is: what is blue, has 56 legs, and sits at home all day with its fingers crossed? The West Midlands Serious Crime Squad. I like that one. How many members of the West Midland Crime Squad does it take to change a light bulb? Two. One to change the light bulb and one to hide the old one. It's incredible that the police have been caught falsifying sort of confessions. The police have got more false confessions than a Catholic boarding school. Oh dear, so that's all been going on. And what I thought is, you can't trust any group of workers that automatically, every year, get a pay rise above the rate of inflation. I reckon they ought to fight for their pay increases. You'd have a work to rule. It'd be great. Wow, 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 wow. Right, you, freeze, up against... Oh, it's 6:30. It's all right, you can run along. The biggest cult we've had recently has been in people taking the law into their own hands. Like Batman, for example. He is, he's a complete cult. You know, by day, a millionaire businessman, by night, a crime fighter. It kind of puts a new light on Bernard Matthews, really, doesn't it? Pow, cam, pa-bang! Who are you, turkey man? Have a look at these, Kim, they're beautiful. And the neighbourhood watch schemes, that's quite weird. I mean, it's just an excuse, isn't it? So, oh, look, they're getting robbed in number 13. I didn't know they had a video. Oh, they do. Well, they don't now, do they? Anyway, so what I wanted to talk about was about law enforcement and the police. So, first of all, have we got any police officers here? It takes a couple of minutes for it to get through this question. Have I got the uniform on? No, okay, I'll keep quiet then, all right. First of all, can we just have a quick vote? All of you who think that the police are doing a good job and support the police, I want you to shout, yeah! Yeah! Okay, I'll be talking to you in a minute. you said that you would support the police. Is that for any particular reason, can I ask you?
I'm married to a policeman.
You're married to a policeman? That's brilliant. You're married to a policeman. James Anderton lives with Eric and Martin. That's quite cool, isn't it? But I think that the interesting stuff is like in vigilantes. The Guardian Angels, for example. Have we got any supporters of the Guardian Angels here? Okay, have we got any opponents to the Guardian Angels? Okay, it's random picking on time. We'll start with him because he's really sweet. He come to all the first series and sat here, didn't you? Your sweetie little, fat, lovely, cuddly bum. That's just a nickname. So let's hear your thoughts on the subject.
What subject?
On Guardian Angels. Guardian Angels and police. He's very sweet.
I just wonder whether there are no Guardian Angels in the Kensington Harbour.
Why are there no Guardian Angels on the Kensington Hopper? Very good question. Very good question. A question I'm sure we are burning to know the answer for. Actually, I tell you what was amazing. In the Tube, they've decided to put piped music into the tubes now, which is great, because we're going to be standing on platforms. It's going to go, ba, ba, ba. Dab-a-dab-a-dab, dab-a-dab-a-dab, ba-ba. This is Northern Line information at Euston. We're sorry for the delay. This is due to a body under the train. Ba-da-da, dab-a-dab-a-dab, dab-a-dab. What about the Neighbourhood Watch? Do you approve of that? You are in the Neighbourhood Watch?
Yes, I was, up until the point where my house got robbed while I was out watching the others.
And now, it's time for the Great British Television Experience, Part 1. We would like to take this opportunity to state clearly and unequivocally that...
British television is the best in the world.
Fact, the most watched programmes on British TV are Neighbours, Blind Date and Michael Barrymore's Saturday Night Out. Conclusion,
British TV is the best in the world.
Fact, Mike Smith earns a living. Conclusion.
British TV is the best in the world.
Every year, Terry Wogan earns £300,000, Esther Ranson earns £250,000, and Ken Dodd earns 30p. Apparently. Conclusion.
Ken Dodd is innocent.
Fact. The manganese sulfate turned white and left a milky residue. Conclusion.
Sulfate compounds react with water to produce hydrogen.
So there you have it. But what is it that actually makes British TV the best in the world? Well, firstly, there's soap opera, and in particular, the modern, gritty realism of EastEnders.
Well, Mr. Karim, speaking as a good old company boy, I just want to say it's great to meet a real Pakistani who isn't in any way a stereotype.
Oh, thank you so kindly, but I'm afraid I cannot be drinking because of Allah and also because I have to go back to my corner shop and shout at my daughter about arranged marriages. Goodbye.
All right, then. Hello, Dr. Samuels, how are you?
Jewish. I'd just like to say Israel and circumcision.
Bloody. Blimey, my view of the whole world has been turned upside down. Thank God Darren the Black Man is a complete criminal.
In fact, the characterisation on EastEnders is so two-dimensional that many of you may not have spotted the addition to the cast 2 weeks ago of Captain Pugwash.
Another thing about EastEnders is that the whole programme is built around one family, the Beals and Fowlers, so it always tends towards incestuousness. If this inbreeding continues, by the year 2020, EastEnders will be entirely composed of mental defectives, and therefore will at last be a realistic portrayal of the East End.
Inbreeding in Neighbours actually takes in the whole of Australian TV, as anyone who is ever in Neighbours will also have at some point been in Prisoner Cell Block H, Sons and Daughters, The Sullivans, Home and Away, A Country Practice and Picnic at Hanging Rock. This is because in the whole of Australia there are only 12 actors, none of whom are in Neighbours. Neighbours is distinguishable from British soap opera in two ways. Firstly, it includes incidental music, particularly in comedy moments. If, for example, Bouncer has shat on Harold's prayer book, in the background we will hear... Unfortunately, this will often continue well into the next scene.
Listen, Charlene, I've got to tell you, you've got cancer.
Neighbours is full of incredibly successful pop stars. Now, the attempts of British soap stars to capitalise on the pop market, however, has resulted most notably in Anita Dobson's Anyone Can Fall in Love, which very cleverly fitted those lyrics around the theme...
Da, 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 da.
So, presumably, had the theme gone...
Da, 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 da,
the song would have been called Anyone Can Fall in Some Custard.
Other celebrities have since launched pop singles based on their theme tunes. The most successful of these, we predict, will be this soon-to-be-released single by Alistair Burnett.
I love you so, two ginger dough. I love you so, oh, please don't tell me no. You're so sexy. I'm not a gigolo girl. And you're just a very special lady. And baby, I mean it when I say, everything you do just turns me on.
Friday evening, you're there again. Usual seat, 27 row, and I know the back of your head now, like the back of my hand, and it burns me up. I know you've seen me with the other lads. I know you think I'm just as bad as them, but I want to run down that aisle and scream, I'm not. It's just that when the lights go down, I can't help it. It's just like an addiction, girl, I can't help it. I just hope that you can understand what I'm trying to say to you.
Look, Candy's got a dress on!
Means I'm shy, girl.
They did this bit with models!
Means I just need some security.
I thought you said there was a car chase.
Means I need a hand to hold. And
this hot dog's like my Willie.
Means I love you. I'm sensitive to love and emotion. Even though I shouted,
get your kit off!
All the way through Fatal Attraction, along with all the other boys. When the Jorix adverts come on the screen,
It's not the real me that wants to scream,
"Use a crisp packet, mate!"
And then pull my cheeks to make a squelching noise. In the final scene of Nightmare on Elm Street, when I shouted,
"Wow!"
extremely loudly, I know it made you cry, but that's only cause, well, you didn't understand.
Look! Batman's got a hard on!
Means I'm shy girl.
He's the one who gets killed later!
Means I just need some security.
That's the bloke out of Blade 7!
Means I need a hand to hold, and... means I love you.
The Mary Whitehouse Experience.
Wow! Donna McPhail here. I've just had another birthday. I'm 27 years old now, and to tell you the truth, I'm beginning to feel a bit past it. And I keep catching myself saying things that my parents used to say to me when I was living at home. This is not a hotel, young lady. And I say that now. Walking down the street completely on my own. No one around for miles. Totally out of context. And I actually went through a period of feeling incredibly broody last year, which is not like me, because to tell you the truth, I hate children. I do, really. I want to slap them because they've got their whole lives ahead of them. I feel very bitter about it. And there are a lot of kids on my estate, and they actually quite frighten me. And they're so sexually aware these days, aren't they? I mean, the small ones are all right. They just hang around in the forecourt playing strip hopscotch and stab the granny, but... I spent most of my puberty at home playing kaplunk. No, I did. Playing kaplunk and reading Enid Blyton. Poor old Enid, eh? If only she were here today. If she were here today, well, she'd smell, wouldn't she? But apart from that... Of course, she's out of favour with the education authorities at the moment, and that's what the kids are missing out on today. Midnight feast strapping gym mistresses. I love those books. I love those girls. Daryl, the tomboy. Short fingernails, dead giveaway. That's a private joke, obviously. And June, my favourite, June the swimmer, June the rugged, athletically swimmer, would get up at 6 o'clock every morning, remember girls, and start toweling herself dry with a big, white, really rough towel until all the blood was pumping through her veins and muscles were bulging. Anyway, childhood, yes. I was so close, actually, to going for the whole pregnancy thing, but I luckily had the experience of my life last year totally put me off the idea of childbirth, because I was actually in the room when a friend of mine gave birth to a baby. Puts you off your dinner. No, I defy even a vegetarian to eat a lentil burger under those circumstances. No, I thought I was ready, you know. I thought on the day I was going to be the hero of the hour. Nothing could be wrong. And, of course, when the time came, I totally fell apart because nothing can prepare you for, like, the screaming for a start. The screaming and the grunting and groaning and the crying. The next day, my throat was agony. And I was embarrassed, you know, because I thought all these men have been at the delivery of their son and daughter and they haven't fainted. Why am I having so many problems? And I've figured out now why it is. It's easy, because basically men don't have the same bits as women, do they? Apparently. And so, and so they can't possibly understand how excruciating and impossible the whole thing is. Much in the same way as a woman couldn't appreciate how painful it would be for a man to get his testes caught in a vice. One more turn. And it did the trick, though. It put me off for life. Because it's not natural, is it? Something that big just isn't supposed to go through a hole that small. It's like trying to drive a car down a rabbit hole. It happens, though. Quite often, apparently, I got quite obsessed with the whole idea of childbirth for a while. Kept reading reports in the newspaper about women who'd given birth to their baby without ever realising they were pregnant. Which I find really hard to believe. You're bound to have some idea, unless you're very, very stupid. because you don't see your feet for a long time. You're out here, you eat like a pig, you don't have a period for months. I mean, you're either pregnant or you're turning into Bernard Manning. And either way, you need urgent medical attention, let's face it. Thank you.
And now, the Radio Times experience.
In your Radio Times this week, Philip Schofield's favourite recipes with bananas. Gloria Hunniford and Karen Keating bake this week's family cupcakes. Then there's Me and My Bathroom. This week, Richard Briers.
And in our I'm So Famous column, Michael Barrymore says, I'm so famous. Sue Lawley tells us all about her favourite elevenses, and a new regular feature, Debbie Thrower explains why she's knackered by lunchtime.
And there's Me and My Pullover by Desmond Lynham. And your chance to win photos of your favourite stars from BBC Soaps in a celebrity TV trivia quiz, plus My Favourite Toaster by Liz Dennis.
On page 16, the editor of the Radio Times explains why his magazine is all crappy celebrity trivia nowadays. While on page 32, it's Andy Crane's My Kind of Self-Assembly Video Cabinet. All that plus Desmond Lynham's tips for successful windscreen wiper blade changing.
And Greg visits the Bahamas for a new series of All on Expenses. And it's the turn of Keith Chegwin and Maggie Philbin to show you their country cottage we bought with your money. And there's Neris Hughes on how to cope with snuffles and sneezes and open-heart aortic bypass surgery in your own home.
All that plus lots of tedious Australians. Yes, that's Kylie and Jason on the cover of the new Radio Times. Oh, and if you want the TV programmes, they're on page 59 under the advert for the timeshare cottage near Sellafield and the thing that says, Bald Men Set the Pace. And if you want the radio programmes, Desmond Lynham says, Piss off.
And now time for the punchline experience. Before the show, the studio audience are asked to think of a funny punchline to the following sentence. What did Mr. Gorbachev say when he telephoned the first Solidarity Prime Minister of Poland? I've got all the answers collected here on little bits of paper, and the funniest one will win a prize, a microwave oven. So here we go. What did Mr. Gorbachev say when he telephoned the first Solidarity Prime Minister of Poland? Could I speak to J.R. Hartley? I'm ignoring that, as someone writes it every week. What did Mr. Gorbachev say when he telephoned the first Solidarity Prime Minister of Poland? Hello, oh shit, the money won't go in. Do you want to buy a second-hand nuclear power station? Ken Dodd is innocent. And that's from Nick Funnyman Davis, apparently, who is brackets a diddy man, has also spelled Dodd with one D and innocent with one N. So he obviously is Ken Dodd. Can I borrow your hemorrhoid cream? And that's from Heather Thomas. I'm ringing about the larder in the paper. And that's from Mrs. Doreen Siberia Davis, apparently. I can hardly hear you. Pedal faster. That's from David Atwater. Comrade Dodd is innocent. Have you seen that the stupid fat bastard with the beard is back? With a T-shirt, yuck, that's from J.R. Hartley, apparently. This is a really odd one. Someone has just written potato in really big... just over the whole lot. And it says, my name is Cypress Red. Right? And I really hope he gets arrested and taken somewhere safe. Well, that's it. That's the end of it. So what have I got in my pocket? What are the funniest ones that I've got in my pocket here? I can hardly hear you. Pedal faster. Can we have a round of applause for that? And now, a round of applause for I am ringing about the larder in the paper. Okay, so that gets it. A Lada microwave goes to Mrs. Doreen Siberia Davis.
And now, the last instalment of our interactive fantasy adventure series this week. We reach the climax as our hero battles with the forces of good and evil. Without more ado...
The Dragon Sword of Trollsbane. Part the fourth, the final conflict.
Now, before we begin...
Tom Cruise and Arnold Schwarzenegger are out for each other's blood... And only one man can stop them.
Now, if we can just find...
That man is Desmond Lynam.
Yes, thank you.
Desmond Lynam presents a Desmond Lynam production. Desmond Lynam in The Final Score.
Yes, right. Thank you very, very much. Before we can finish the tale, we need two volunteers from the audience to play good and evil. Now, who wants to play good? No one at all. Well, this man here is shaking his head, so he can play good, in fact. So, you're good. Could you go over to the yellow mic, sir? Yellow for good, and also for the SLD, strangely enough. And, well, evil, it's got to be the fat bastard with a beard, I suppose. Well, well, then. You could go over to the black mic. Yep.
You are the two all-powerful mega wizards of Haran, okay? Now, you, white wizard of good, you must say... I, Amrak, shall defeat the powers of darkness.
I, Amrak, shall defeat the powers of darkness.
And you, Dark Wizard of Evil, you must reply, bollocks.
Bollocks.
Now, the scene is set for the titanic struggle as our hero, played by Mark here, sets forth to recover the lost sword of Trollsbane from the Tower of Eternal Doom. There is only one way in, through the main gate.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Can I go in?
Oh, no, sir, I'm afraid not, no. Well, it's more than my job's worth, I'm afraid. Who have you come to see?
Mondrak, the evil one.
Oh, yes, sir. Is he expecting you?
No.
Oh.
I'm sorry, I must see him now.
Don't push me, sir, or I may be forced to turn...
Nasty.
There is only one hope that Amrak, the good wizard, will cast a spell on the job's worth so that Mark can slip past him. Amrak, you will turn him into...
Turn him into a newt.
Newt?
A newt.
Right, yes.
Oh, please don't turn me into an...
Brilliant. Brilliant newt.
Now's my chance.
Mark slips past the Jobsworth and into a long stone-flagged passage along the floor. He notices a trail of slime that can mean only one thing. Kenneth Baker has been this way.
But it's worse than that. It is the trail left by the great venom slug of Doran. A huge, pulsing, luminescent, bulbous blob of oozing slime 20 feet long and 8 feet high. Too late. Mark realizes that its 800 eyes stare at him, its slavering jaws open, that only one man can save him.
Desmond Lynam.
No, not Desmond Lynam, but Johnny Morris.
Oh, hello. Now, what animal is this, then? It's a venom slug. Now the venom slug says... Hello, Johnny. And I say, hello, Sluggy. I say, do you want some potato peelings? And he says, no. I want to rip out your intestines.
By the heroic sacrifice of Johnny Morris, Mark is through. He climbs up the 2,500 stone stairs until he reaches the door, behind which the force of evil keep the Dragon Sword of Trollsbane. There is now only one more obstacle to overcome. The dreaded guardian of the chamber, the three-headed queen monster. But... Fortunately for Mark, there is one way to confuse the Queen Monster. It doesn't know whether it's the Queen or just Queen.
One sees a little silhouette of a man.
Scaramouche, Scaramouche, will you do the fandango? Thunderbolt and lightning, very, very frightening. One is frightened.
Taking advantage of the confusion, Mark slips past, and there, lying on a velvet plinth, is the Dragon Sword. He seizes it, intending to return it to its rightful owner, the mighty Nice-O of Niceland. But its power courses through him. If Mark keeps it for himself, its awesome power will be his. But for good or for evil, The good wizard tries to persuade him to return it.
Give it back, will ya?
All right, then.
Well, Mark's been swayed by a very persuasive piece of debating, I must admit. Terribly convincing a recent argument, but the evil wizard is trying to persuade him to keep it.
If you keep it, then you get your bollocks back by return of post.
Fair enough.
Well, Mark's going this way and that, really, and the bollocks have been brought into it. I don't know where they came from, but in the end, it's so heavy, he drops it and it slices his own head off.
If only you had entrusted the task
to Desmond Lyman.
You've been listening to the goddamn Mary Whitehouse Experience, huh? It was written and performed by David Baddiel, Rob Newman, Steve Hunt, Hugh Dennis, Mark Thomas, Donna McPhail, and Tim Furth. The production assistant was Viv Drew. The sound was by Max Alcock. Hell of a name, ain't it, hey? And the producer was Harry Thompson. God damn it, good night.